bunches to it. Below that pugged nose, a mouth that held teeth irregularly spaced and a dreary shade of ivory. His square head sported an unruly swatch of hair, the color of clean copper. Thick neck, stout body, and a sweaty khaki uniform that displayed the chevrons of a military enlisted man on its sleeves. This was Gunnery Sergeant Dexter Guns Preston, United States Marine Corps.
"I'm empty," Preston said.
"Same here," the other man said.
He removed his circle-brimmed campaign hat to reveal a gleaming, bald pate. Perspiration drizzled down his round cheeks and around a dark mustache, waxed into a handlebar style that strained military appearance standards. His round chin held back a subtle jowl beneath it. The top three buttons of his uniform shirt ripped away during the firefight, and the bottom three were precariously close to popping as they strained against the beer belly behind it. He was a big man, but not in height. On that point, he had barely passed the minimum requirement for enlistment into the Army. He was big in girth, with meaty arms and legs, and thick fingers that could wield a mechanics wrench as deftly as an orchestra conductor did his baton. This was Master Sergeant Michael Hammer Down, United States Army. Down patted his empty shirt pocket. An enemy round drilled through the berm and gouged the ground near Down's left foot. He absently moved it out of the way as he checked his other shirt pocket.
"There you are," he said to the cigar butt he found in the pocket.
He slipped it between his lips and patted his pants pockets.
"Aw, shit!"
"What now?" asked the third member of the group, a woman. But she was no ordinary woman. There was no apron around her waist or frilly collar covering her throat. She didn't wear sensible shoes or pink shell cameo brooches. She wore russet-colored leather boots over khaki riding breeches that hugged her thighs and trim waist. An olive-colored button-down shirt emphasized, rather than shrouded, her womanly form. Her shirt sleeves rolled up onto her sinewy forearms. An open collar displayed the lines of her neck and the shadows of her throat, and below. Mahogany hair waved behind her ears and fell to her shoulders in a style often worn by the actress Joan Crawford in her moving pictures. Her facial features were soft and rounded, suggesting a degree of sweetness and delicacy that just wasn't part of her character. To offset that, she painted her eyebrows with a slight angle rather than a soft curve. This was Rita Marshall of the United States War Department. Another round chipped parts of the berm away.
"Lost my matches. Got a light?"
Down asked Rita. Rita rolled her eyes and pulled a box of stick matches from her shirt pocket and handed them to Down. As he lit up, she set her own empty Thompson on the ground and reached into a leather satchel. She pulled out a chrome-plated .38 Smith & Wesson Model 1905 revolver with a 4-inch barrel. She released the cylinder, ensuring it was fully loaded, and flicked her wrist to redock the cylinder. It looked as if she knew what she was doing.
"Damn, Rita," Preston said. "I love it when you do that."
"Moron," Rita returned. Down blew a cloud of tobacco smoke above them, which was immediately vaporized by machine gun fire. At that point, the gunfire stopped. Rita eased her head just above the edge of the berm.
"They're changing targets."
1 minute before, on the bluff above, two other military men looked down at the circle of U.S. Army trucks the shooters were using as a base of operations. Both men carried Thompson submachine guns with full 100-round ammo drums and Colt 45 semi-automatic pistols, loaded and holstered. From their vantage point, they could see the rocky coastline where Hammer Down, Guns Preston, and Rita Marshall were pinned down. They could also see the enemy camp and counted a dozen men shooting at them.
"How the hell'd they get themselves in that mess?" one of the two military men said to the other. "They were just supposed to watch those Jerrys."
His voice carried a slight accent, reminiscent of the southeastern United States. He removed his khaki service cap and wiped the perspiration off his forehead with a handkerchief. His bark brown hair lay in flat, sweaty tangles against his head. He remounted the service cap and rubbed the edge of a thumb over his pencil mustache. The mustache and lazy grin often drew comments of his resemblance to the young actor Clark Gable. He had never seen this actor and did not know if this was true or why it was important. But while Gable was a leading man in moving pictures, this man was a leading aviator in the